if someone's ever given you one of those monthly subscription gifts where you get the chocolate of the month, or this is a real one, the socks of the month club, every month you're like, oh, that's a fun little gift, and it reminds you that they were thinking of you. Well, buckle up, Buttercup. We're about to take subscription services to a whole new level. It's the Chicken of the Month Club. That's right. You can join me and other potties and WayFM listeners at fh.org/Wally Show and give two chickens to a different family every month. Now, chickens in these developing countries make a huge difference in the lives of these families. These chickens provide a sustainable source of protein through their eggs every day, which helps nourish malnourished kids. And since chickens multiply quickly, it's a great side hustle for these families in that they can generate income by selling eggs or chicks in the market. And by you doing a $28 a month gift, you can make sure that a different family gets two chickens every month. That's kind of cool and very different. If someone gave me two chickens every month, I wouldn't know what to do with that. But in these other countries, they not only know what to do with them, they're also very thankful for people thinking of them and helping them out of these tough times. So what I love about Food for the Hungry is their mission to end poverty by going to the places and walking with some of the world's most vulnerable people, and they've done it for 50 years. You can trust them and you can do some good right now. So go to fh.org/Wally Show if you want to join our Chicken of the Month Club. Welcome to the Wally Show Aftercast. All that stuff we didn't get to during the course of the show today. Betty Rock's still out, coming back Friday. And speaking of Friday, I'm really excited about this. We have Francesca DeVito. She is a person that is a potty just like you, listens to the show, and she's a friend of the show. But she lost her dad in 9/11 20 years ago when she was 13. And it's... like I wanted to interview somebody that had been directly affected by this, and she was the perfect person since we knew her. And I didn't know all of her story. I thought I knew most of it, but I didn't know all of it. And her story's great. And so this week on Friday, we're going to post that. We'll play it on the show as well. So if you listen to the regular podcast, you'll be able to hear parts of it. But then we're also going to post it at wayfm.com so you can see the entire interview. But I can't say enough good things about her. She crushed it shared her story really well, and was really honest about it, because, you know, there's anger with that too. And I was really, really, really impressed by her.
And if anything, go see it for her accent. New Jersey accent.
Oh, it's my favorite.
It is fantastic.
Hers and Betty's are the two of my favorite accents.
Agree. They're so opposite, but they're perfect.
And it's funny because, too, like you know, we're talking about a New York cop, basically. And then when she starts in, you're like, it's every stereotype, every Italian stereotype. But I love it. Jersey, so good. Like, but love her to death. So make sure you look for that on Friday. Right now, here we go with some Aftercast news. As COVID-19 cases remain at a level not seen since before vaccines were widely available in the U.S., Joe Biden, their President Joe, is set to deliver some remarks on Thursday on a new strategy to stop the spread of the Delta variant. And you're like,
new strategy?
Yeah, what is this? I mean, we've tried giving people money, and that didn't work. We've tried a lot of other things. So what could this possibly be? It's six-pronged. Has six prongs to it.
You think that, like, America can handle something with, like, one prong?
No!
We can't. Don't throw six at us.
Yeah, we'll be like, are you kidding me? Here's the deal, though. Like, honestly, like, I'm curious what all six are, but what I think the main gist of it is going to be getting the public to institute the rules he would love to do on a national level, but he's not allowed to. Like, he would love to institute, like, mandates for things. And I'm not speaking out of school either. Like, I think he would tell you this. Like, he would love to see it mandated, because his belief is we mandate this, we finish it, and we move on. And that's his position. But in not being able to legally do so, I think he's going to call on the private sector to continue to force people to get the vaccine. Like companies like Facebook, Google, Delta, Citigroup, some of these big companies already are doing that.
Yeah.
So they're kind of doing his work, because the thing I told you a while ago, I said the way they're going to get compliance on this isn't through lotteries. It's through annoying you. Like, like bothering you so much that it's a pain. Like Hawaii shutting down a lot of its, you know, restaurants and things like that to people who haven't been tested within 24 or within 48 hours. Like, it's always the inconvenience. We hate to be inconvenienced as a society. And that's how they're going to get the compliance. Now, all of that said, full disclosure, I have a vaccine. I got my vaccine and I don't regret doing it. Honestly, I don't. But by the same token, I am not for, like, that was my choice, but I am not for, hey, let's let the government mandate all this stuff at all. I will never be. I'm always in favor of less government, you know, interaction with things. And so it'll be really interesting to see. I like the White House saying, well, we will realize we can't do it, but they are going to put pressure because then they can put pressure on or incentivize companies to then push the employees to do what they want them to do. And again, I do understand most people are trying to do what they feel is best, but everybody has different paths to that. And so from his mindset, it doesn't make any sense why people wouldn't get the vaccine. But for people that have concerns about it and concerns about the government and the shifting science, when they say follow the science, but the science shifts, you know, so I like people saying, I don't really fully trust that. You have to understand that that's their right to still do that.
Yeah, like, because the message is never, hey, this is what we think you should do based on the science today. They just say the science. Matter of factly, they don't give us a lot of room to wait until we figure it out because we're still not figured. It's not figured out.
No, and we set aside the rules arbitrarily.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, don't wear masks. They don't matter. And they were lying because they wanted to save the PPE for the first responders. So you're like, okay, that's a bad start. But then you look at like the HIPAA requirements. I couldn't call my daughter's school when she was in college. I was paying for every stick of that bill. I couldn't call them and get any information about her, from her health to her grades. Nothing. I could get no information. She had to make me on the account, you know, or else they could tell me nothing. And I was footing the entire bill, and I'm like, absolutely not. But like, so with HIPAA, they're always like, you can't tell you this, can't say this, can't, everyone's so careful. But with the vaccine, it's like, they're like, well, here's the loophole. HIPAA doesn't apply to this because it's this pandemic or because of this. And so people are just telling people's status all over the place. And I don't think that's right either. Like, I think if you're going to abide by these HIPAA laws, you shouldn't be able to tell people, you know, force people to tell you if they're vaccinated or not. There's inequity. And I think that's part of the problem. And that's where people go nuts about all this stuff. So it'll be interesting. He's making the announcement tomorrow. So I'm going to keep an eye on this and see where it goes and what the actual take is. I'm curious what the other five prongs are going to be. Because I know the one prong is definitely the private sector. So
It is. It's going to be interesting. We're just never, none of these prongs are going to set us back to like, you know, like April or May of 2020. I don't think where we're just not doing a single thing anymore. But I think you're right that they want us to.
I think that ship for America has sailed. Other countries have been able to reinstitute the extreme lockdown and quarantine and stuff. We are built as a society of rebels. That's how our country came to be, was we didn't like something, so we seceded, you know? And I don't see us being able to go back to that place without it being uber divisive.
Very chaotic.
You know, I'm as curious as the next guy to see how this is going to shake out in the future. You know Zendaya, the actress.
Yes.
So we're going to switch to a little least of these here.
Yeah.
You probably know her from The Greatest Showman. She was great in that, actually, too.
She started off, I'm trying to remember, it was called Shake It Up.
You know it was called Shake It Up. You watched it religiously.
This was after, I remember I watched Wizards of Waverly Place.
Okay.
I did watch Hannah Montana.
Yeah,
but
you
then
did.
That show came out after the fact, so I remember seeing like my brother and sister watching it. I didn't like Zendaya. I'm not like a huge fan of her now, but I didn't care for her back then.
She was on that show, Shake It Up. You're right. My daughter watched that show
because
it was two girls. It was Zendaya and I forget the other girl's name.
Bella Thorne.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, like a redhead.
For a guy who knew nothing about this show, you're knocking out some stuff. I believe the second unit producer was Tim Robbins.
It ran from this date to this date.
You know what? It's interesting the two paths these girls went on. Bella Thorne. fell off the wagon, and her life went down a really different path than Zendaya did, and not a healthy one, no. You know. But it's interesting because Zendaya, they said when she was on that show, she was supposed to, her character, kiss a boy as part of one of the plots in the episode, and she refused to do it because she didn't want her first kiss to be like a fake on-screen kiss. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I actually respect that. Good for her. And at that age, to stand for something that you believed in there and to not be pushed into something you didn't want to do, that's pretty amazing, actually.
I remember in theater, we did this like one play, and the play did involve there being a kiss between two people, me and one of the other characters in the play.
Okay, so they went with the strapping young leading man, Gavin.
That's right.
Okay.
The 5'6" kid that I was back then.
He's going to tell me it was the Princess and the Frog.
No.
I was the frog.
It was a play where, these two characters were supposed to kiss, and the girl was my friend Megan, and that is one of those things where it's such an awkward situation.
Yeah, that'd
when
be weird.
You get to the part in the play, like you do all this practice and you do all these warm ups, and then you get through certain scenes, and then you get to that scene.
Right.
And it's just like, you don't practice that off.
Yeah, you try. You ask her, hey, you want to come over and run some lines, maybe practice that kiss thing? I mean, I don't want to do it either.
I was dating someone at the time, too.
Oh, were you
so,
really?
Yeah, that was super weird.
Yeah, that would be weird
as
a kid.
It's a 16-year-old, yeah. She had never had, like, a kiss before.
Right.
And so, on the first... And I didn't know that. And in fairness, I was a dumb boy who didn't, like, think to ask that
either. Who would? Yeah. I wouldn't think of that. Are you kidding me? At 16, I'd be like, all right, this is great.
When we did it for the first time in rehearsal, like, she, like, blew out of the room.
Really?
With emotion. Because, in essence, it was...
Because you're that good. Wow, nicely done.
Yeah, that's... That's the case.
You ruined her for life, Gavin.
I ruined her first kiss.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that stinks. And I don't think guys think too heavily about that either.
I can set aside stuff like that, like, for work and things like that. Like, I don't see them. Because my daughter had the same thing. She was in my daughter was in a play, and her first kiss was a stage thing. And she actually did think about it. It was like, I don't know if I like this. I'm not sure. You know, and she ended up doing the role. But it was interesting the way that she processed it. And I'm like, hey, process however you want, do what you're comfortable doing, you know? But that was like her first kiss too. So it's just interesting. I think boundaries are a good thing, and it's good to see like kids that have those. I know the world kind of maligns a lot of that kind of stuff and pokes fun at it and mocks it. Like, I'm always amazed by The Bachelor. And, like, the big reveal, whether it's the girl or the guy, it's like, I don't even know how to tell them I'm a virgin. And you're like, what are they going to think? Like, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Shouldn't
like,
be.
I don't think it's going to, like, someone's going to go, oh, well, I want nothing to do with you anymore. Like, it's, but they always hype it up like it's this big thing. And it's probably because we put this stigma that you're uncool or you're not, you know, maybe people didn't desire you. And so why, what's wrong with you kind of thing. And I think that that's a dangerous thing. And it's a dangerous message for kids because, like, when you're growing up, man, you're just not prepared to handle all that stuff. You think you are, but you're just not. There's so many emotions that go with that outside of just the physical problems, like teenage pregnancy and things like that. But there's so much more to it that can wreck you. And so, I mean, that's why the Bible kind of knows what it's talking about.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if you ever have the talk with your parents.
That was
like,
fun.
Yeah. Mine was at a...
Chuck E. Cheese.
No.
Was Chuck E. Cheese. I thought I was waiting for you to say.
It was funny though. My dad came to my school on like a Tuesday or Wednesday morning, and he was just like, picked me up. He's like, we're going to a baseball game today.
Nice.
Took me out of school, got in the car. I wanted to talk to you about something. I'm like, oh, he betrays me here.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, they do it out of love.
And then he's reinforcing it. He's like, okay, do you see that? He got to first base. Now here's it.
Oh, I'm going to remember that one.
Yeah, I had to do the talk with my daughter. My wife.
Did you?
I did it, yeah.
Because I always feel like in my head it's got to be the dad to the son, the mom to the daughter.
Yep.
Oh, my.
Trust me, the day that we found out we were having a daughter 22 years ago, I feared that day. The day that I would have to have the talk, I feared that day.
I believe that.
Coming up, I'm like, well, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. You're going to do this, Marty. And so what happened was my wife... We sat down with Haley, and my wife started in on it, and she just wasn't doing well, honestly. So
Marty did try.
She tried, and you know me, like I'll take charge of something. If the situation doesn't seem to be going well, I'm gonna take over. And so I was really matter of fact about it. I'm like, all right, honey, I got this. Don't worry about it. And so we go through everything, and I was very direct and far more street than clinical, you know, and
Did you get biblical?
Yeah,
at all? No,
yeah. And so, like, I was really giving her a gentleman's perspective on things too, and I'll never forget the look on my daughter's face, just like aghast at like everything I just laid on her. And I'm like, so there you go. All right,
who wants ice cream?
Yeah, if you and your mom want to debrief this later, that's fine. But let's go get something to eat.
You were the Spark Notes version of the talk.
Yeah, I was like, all right, I'm doing this. No. Once I was in, like, it's like anything. There's things you just starting's the hardest part, and the awkwardness of it. But then it's like I'm like, all right, I'm in, and now we're in the awkward. So we're sitting in it. So let's just knock it out.
Nobody likes this.
Yeah. So at this point, let's own that fact.
Yeah.
We're all awkward and uncomfortable, but it's important. And here's why it's important. And then you bring in the spiritual side of things
as
well.
Baseball side of things.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. What do you got for birthdays?
There were no birthdays for the day. Would you like a question?
I would like a question. I love questions.
This is an interesting one that makes me remember something that we did a long time ago, but it's, what can you do better with your least dominant hand or arm than the dominant? Like, what's something that you're actually good with your left hand at? And I remember there was a video, a thing that we did like a really long time ago. I think we asked a really similar question. I was like, oh, I can catch well with my left hand.
Yes,
he threw something and I didn't catch it, disproving that theory.
Oh, I can catch with my other hand. And I literally threw it right at you and you dropped it.
Yeah.
It was so funny. I'm not good with anything with my left hand.
No, me neither.
I tried to throw a frisbee with my left hand. I can't do it. I've tried to throw like a baseball with my left hand. Cannot. It is the most. This appendage, I don't even know why I have it. This left arm is just so useless. I can't write with it. The one weird thing I do, this is what's weird. If I'm eating something like out of a bag, like say I'm eating Raisinets. Okay. So I reach my right hand. I reach my right hand in the bag of Raisinets. I take them out. You would think you take a handful of Raisinets and you just throw them in your mouth and eat it. I put it in my left hand. I hold it in my left hand and then I eat it out of my left hand.
So your left hand is the controlling factor of like the bag, the Raisinets.
Yeah. So my left hand is good at holding things.
Well,
apparently.
There you go.
Like that's all it can do.
Okay. So let's say you have a steak in front of you. Fork and knife. What hand do you cut with the knife?
Right hand, like normal.
Okay, I'm weird. I actually do use my left hand.
You do it the German way.
I guess it's the German. I didn't know that, but I do that. Haley thinks I'm a freak for it, just because you're supposed to switch.
You
with
cut
your
with
knife.
Your left hand.
I use the knife with my left hand.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just like for some reason I feel more in control that way. And then with my right hand with the knife. But if I was sword fighting or knife fighting, like I would use.
I just realized my daughter's right-handed does the same thing yesterday.
No.
I made steaks and I looked over. I literally had this conversation with her. I'm like, you're cutting that with your left hand. I'm like, that's weird, but it's kind of like the German way. Like you would cut it and then your fork, your dominant hand is already in your right hand.
You
just eat it right there.
That's
instead of having to switch.
I don't like the idea of like switching, I guess. But yeah. Definitely can't catch with this.
No, you cannot. I forgot that. That's so funny. All right, you know what? I think that's going to do it for our aftercast for today. And we will do this all again tomorrow.